What a goal!
The League of Ireland is back.
Every Friday night, it'll be impossible to miss the League of Ireland.
Make sure you listen to the League of Ireland exclusively on Off the Ball.
Become a member now and join in the obsession. Subscribe at offtheball.com/join.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehill and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is the Hurling Pod. It is the end of the regular section of the league. We've got a very novel pairing in the 1A final. Tipperary and Cork, two of the great rivals in hurling. Well, they're going to play a Hurling League final for the first time since 1960. Patrick Horgan becoming the top scorer in the history of the league at the weekend as well. He's 1-9, helping Cork to overcome Galway to book their spot in the decider. Tipperary warming up for the final with a win against Clare, which came very late. They were behind for pretty much the entire game. And Limerick boss John Kiely admitted they were pretty poor in closing out their campaign with a loss against Wexford. Waterford joined Offaly in next season's Division 1A by pulling away in the second half of their encounter in Walsh Park. Probably the bigger talking point coming out of that one was the red card for James Mahon. Down in Kildare will replace Laois and Westmeath in the second flight for 2026. Delighted to have Paul Murphy here. Paul, how are you?
How's it going, lads?
James Skehill. Everyone wants to hear you break down Galway's performance at Páirc Uí Chaoimh.
I'm looking forward to that. It's easy to break it down.
I bet. Before we get to that, Paul Murphy, you may as well make it a mission, because I've already put my cards on the table culinary style in this. You had the merging of jam and eggs, and you didn't find it unpleasant.
No, I actually was a little bit worried where you're going with that one there. I thought you were throwing the gauntlet down to me very early on here, but thankfully it's just jam and eggs. Yeah, it was nice. There's not a whole lot to it, really. Like, I mean, it's sugar on eggs. It works. The only one thing I will say about it, Skehill, is you can't really taste the egg. So, like, it's kind of defeating the point of having eggs.
That means you made the egg wrong, Murph.
It's a boiled egg. I actually made. You saw the picture.
It looked pretty good.
It's a mean boiled egg.
It was. Yeah. By pure chance, but yeah.
It's a mean boiled egg, yeah.
It was perfect. But no, yeah, I'll give it to you. Yeah, absolutely.
Before we get off this topic, and it is the end of this topic, I think, I don't think we come back to this ever again. When you're boiling the egg, do you use a timer? Were you using this by, you know, a normal time that you do it? How did you judge your egg so perfectly?
I Googled how long for a boiled egg. Not that I don't know, but I just ballpark. And it said, like, 7 minutes, runny, 9 minutes, whatever. And I forgot about it. It was about 9 minutes. Took it out, put it in cold water so it doesn't burn the hands off me then when I'm peeling it. And opened it up and unbelievable. Boom. Next time, if I tried to do that though, I'd make stones of it, you know. Yeah. So
you got a little bit lucky. I've got one of those timers that's like the sands of time. When you turn it over, that works. Yeah. I used to have one that was a little chicken that you had to kind of wind up for the amount you wanted.
Yeah.
I was wondering what your technique was to get it perfect, but
I don't know. Go on,
Murph. Yeah. I need to move away from eggs for a second. It just triggered this question in my mind there.
Yeah.
Are you trained to do all this like special shit abroad in the woods, like, you know, you're on a mission? But,
to boil like, an egg.
Can you start a fire rod in the wood without anything?
Without anything. To an extent, you can. Yeah. Like,
don't tell me now you've got a lighter. Like, can you start it with something, a pair of stones?
A pair of stones.
Like the old days.
What you're looking for there is flint, is what you're saying.
But like, whatever it is, yeah.
A pair of stones. Like, to an extent, there's different levels of training. So, like, the SEER training is what the actual full survival training in the Defence Forces is. I haven't done that training, but that's where you would really, like, basically be down to your jocks with a knife and off you go. You have to build a shelter and light a fire, all that sort of stuff, get food. Basic, like, you know, in induction training, you'd get a certain amount of that sort of survival training, that these are things to know in terms of, you know, what you should do in terms of wearing the right clothes at different times, if your clothes gets wet, hydration, hypothermia, all those different things. So within that then would be, depending on where you're trained, you'd get a small bit of how to start a fire and what you might need to start a fire. But like, it's not a pass or fail test that we do at any time where we have to.
Yeah, you're dead.
Yeah. You know,
we leave it there.
Yeah.
Well, I heard Bear Grylls, right? He said he was talking about sleeping outside. He was on about, let's say, layers. And he said one on the bottom is worth two on the top.
Yeah.
So when the power went there during the storm, right, it was freezing in the house at like J6, right? So I had this like Patriots kind of blanket and I put it on the bottom. Mm. So I laid on top of it in the bed, right? I haven't taken it away since, lads.
Go ahead.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's immediate heat. Immediate, like, better than the sheets. I'm just on the blanket. And the wife would tell you, this fucking blanket is still here. I'm like, yeah, it's nice to not get rid of it.
But it's functional. That's the main thing. It's functional.
Yeah, it's survival too. I had to do that.
Are you subscribing to the idea as well, Murph, that in all the Vietnam movies, they say keeping your socks dry is the key to survival?
Well, like, one of the things, in fairness, like, so you do several exercises, again, part of induction training, whether you're a recruit or a cadet. And one of the quickest things, except for obviously hydration and things, that someone will fall down on is basically trench foot, is what it's called. If you don't change your socks very regularly, your the bottom of your feet just become like, they become very soft. I don't know what the technical term you'd say for it, but if you start walking in that, then the skin will peel away and so on. So that's why it's often kind of harped upon. And it's not like people would, unless you go mountain climbing or something, you don't really ever think about that or have to know about that. So that's, but I think the one when you watch, like, I don't know how we got on this topic now, but I think when you watch like Vietnam films and stuff, the big part of that is like that it's so humid. So like they were all out there and was, yeah, you're sweating so hard that your feet are sweating, and that's where you get the trench foot and infection, and lads will drop then. So that's kind of that old.
Honestly, Murph, there's a whole podcast in this. I could keep this going for an hour.
All
the questions I have. I've loads of questions. Like, I don't know if this is the place for it.
Do you want? Hold on. So I watched the football pod last week, and it's culturally slightly different. Was my first take when I was watching it, is that the guys were like, "We need to get into this Leitrim situation, and we need to get into the games on the weekend." And there was a nice little. Did you have a nice long weekend? And then straight away they're into it. Now I'm not sure if our listeners prefer us going off into a little tangent for the first 4 or 5 minutes. Some of them will complain and go get to the hurling talk. There's plenty from the weekend, but I think this is our unique selling point. Yeah. Who knows where it goes?
People love the farming anyway. That's one thing we do know. There's a lot of emotion and a lot of logistics is what I've learned from the farm. Get angry, you're happy, and then how the fuck do I do certain things? That's usually what I hear.
Well, I love the follow-ups that come up. So Eamon Long on the YouTube last week. Top tip, lads. This was on the back of us saying you don't want to get cold chips. If you have an air fryer, brings your cold chips right back to life.
Great tip.
It does. I just think it's cheating. Yeah.
How is it cheating?
But I don't know. It just doesn't feel right.
But the thing is, Gael, do you ever get like triple cooked chips anywhere? They're unbelievable. Sure, all
triple,
that is
triple
is,
cooked chips.
Or like double cooked, real crispy chips you get in places. They're either like double cooked or triple cooked. So if you go into a place and you might see it on the menu and you get a burger, it says like double cooked chips. That basically means they were cooked and then they were cooked again. And that's why they're unreal.
You made a statement when I brought out the jam situation. You said, isn't it amazing to hear something you've never heard before?
Do you know?
Right. I have never heard double cooked chips.
Really?
But you
honestly, I don't know. That's fair enough.
Is this a Leinster thing, right? Or what is it?
You're Leinster as well, though.
My heart.
but Scott, like whether you've heard of it or not, you've had them. You've definitely had them. Like, so it's most places. If you go into like a pub and you get a burger and chips, and you get these like big thick chips that are like crispy. The reason they're crispy is because they've been cooked, and they've been cooked a second time or even a third time.
Well, and that's why it's often the justification for charging you £20 as well.
Yeah.
This is education right now.
Oh, see, that's the thing. So like you were thinking now with the air fryer suggestion, throwing the chips in, that it's poor. You pay €20 for it in a decent pub.
I genuinely, I'm telling you this, we could keep this podcast going on the most random topics for 2 hours. No problem. There are so many questions. There's a saying up here, right, where you talk about lads, like, actually, no, I can't say it. No, I can't say that. Let's just take away that last 10 seconds, okay? Can't say that. Regardless, right? We could cover a range of topics, and we could just lead into different. Like we're talking about chips. A minute ago, we're on about survival. That fires. Now we're on chips.
Like, survival being lack of chips. That's
where are we going to be in the next 5 minutes? I have no idea where we're going to be.
Well, hopefully, we're talking about the league final coming up between Tipperary and Cork. If I can get this back on track again.
Sorry.
So this is winding it up very nicely for you, Skell, because so many people messaged and just wanted to hear what your take was going to be. So I was looking through again. It was mainly the Twitter direct responses, which were people, "Are you having a pod tonight?" was essentially the way that was being set up. Stephen Brown 4 on Twitter: "What time is the pod? Can't wait to get Skell's take, particularly on those goals." Declan Harrigan: "Tough but fair on the hurling pod panel. Galway's problems start between the posts. They don't have a Division 1 standard goalkeeper. Poor goals, bad restarts." And then he wants to ask about Cork being favourites at this stage for the All-Ireland. So, let's start with goalkeeper then, because 4 goals are conceded here, Skell. Patrick Horgan getting one of them as part of his 1-9, and he's now the record maker when it comes to the league. Tim O'Mahony gets 1-1, so does Dara Fitzgibbon. And Brian Hayes gets a goal as well. How many of the goals go down to goalkeeping error?
Oh, so that question now is a bit. I wouldn't class goalkeeping error, right? I would say the source of the goals are much further up the pitch. But as John Hardiman said to me years ago, he said an intercounty keeper should be stopping, you know, goals that are deemed as certain goals, you know. And you'd often see these great saves by Owen Murphy and Nicky Quaid and the likes, whereby you think that's definitely a green flag, but next thing somehow they're stopped, right? Now, and with respect, you have to understand too that our defence last night was quite porous. we were continuously on the back foot. It felt like Cork were coming in waves time and time and time again. And you could feel it off the television. So I can't imagine what it felt like between the posts. But I would just probably have preferred that he come off his line a bit, at least make the job a bit harder for the opposition. You know, so as I was saying prior, the goals are 21 foot wide. You know, if you stay in your goals, let's say he's not the biggest man in the world, you're basically offering 7 foot either side of him to go and take a shot. So for the Brian Hayes goal, yes, Pory gets turned, but when he starts coming out, just charge him down. Charge him down, and if it hits you, fantastic. If it goes in past you, it's the result that was going to happen anyways. And kind of the same principle could be applied to, you know, the Timmy Mahoney goal. The Horgan goal, not so much. The Fitzgibbon goal, but come out another bit. You know what I mean? So it's a case of that, like, there are some technical fixes that could be applied just to make the job of the forward a little bit harder, especially in a circumstance whereby you think or it's perceived as a guaranteed goal. So I don't think there's, you know, you can't fault the keeper for those goals going in. Yes, you can look at points, even where the source of the goal came from, that you can improve on and try to get better on. But they're technical fixes, you know, or at least they're attempts at technical fixes. The bigger problem for me is when we have possession. So, like, we have possession, you know, he probably had possession last night. They scored, what, 4-22?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you take half that score off at the moment and you think of when the game was somewhat of a semi-contest, possession 20 times, and we're just not getting any kind of fruition from our possession at all. It just seems very fluid and off the cuff. It looks like when Cork have their puck out seems an awful lot more planned, in that the ball is landing in green grass into space. Now, I know Cork are further down the line, and I'm putting that into context too, because people will look at Galway and say last night, geez, Galway were awful. And they were poor. There's no two ways about it. There's loads of room for improvement. But they're coming up against an outfit who are well-oiled at the moment and being well-run and well-drilled and playing with a certain element of freedom because they seem to know their roles. They're defending very well. They're defending mean, is the way I look at it, right? And they conceded an awful lot of frees last night intentionally. But not ones that could be classed as bad swipes or bad tackles. Ones that are just enough to give away a free, and there's no goals being conceded. Whereas
they pull you down in the opposition half.
Look, they do. I wasn't going to say it that bluntly, but they do. They commit. I put fouls. You know, they do commit fouls, and they don't give you an opportunity to get through, or they try not to give you an opportunity to get through. So they just kind of stop you at source, and they stop you in a position whereby it's just going to be a 40-yard free. And that's fine. Like, that's the defensive tactic. I have no problem with that whatsoever. I would happily adopt that as a coach. Happily adopted, you know, because a three-pointer is, you know, it's oxygen to a team. And look what the Brian Hayes goal did last night in the Fitzgibbon one. Next thing you know, you're 6 points down. Give away two frees, it's only two down. So, but my point being is, Galway have an awful lot to do, of course, right? Is the keeper position a problem at the moment? It's one of many. It's one of many, because what the keeper has to do for the team going forward in today's game, the puck out is the bigger problem. I think if you look at the fundamentally our team, you can't point at an individual. You have to point to the way the team are operating and the manner in which they're operating and saying, is that a problem? And I would say yes. And I would say, functionally, have we got problems? I would say yes. And do you need personnel to operate a very high-level game plan? Yes. But then I also took a stat last night. This one is shocky, lads, right? So it's easy to count stats in the line of shots and goals and points, right? But I have this thing called brilliant basics, right? Taught to me a long time by Jamie Joyce. And he said, just look at the basics in terms of pickups and, you know, balls that are caught, a hand pass, etc., or hand pass that are delivered direct. And if you see teams that are very poor, those fundamentals, right, they're generally, it's going to be a poor passage of play for them. So Limerick were unbelievable at it for the course of, you know, 5 or 6 years, where you always saw passes sticking, never breaking down. So I just took the first quarter last night, and I just took something like a jab lift, right? How many jab lifts to go I missed in the first 20 minutes last night versus Cork? If you throw a guess at me, Murphy, I'll throw it at you. How many jab lifts? Now, what I call a miss, Murph, is they go to pick it, right?
Yeah.
And they miss it. They might get it on the second attempt, might get it on the third attempt.
Yeah.
Might have Galway miss.
Go for seven.
Seven. Okay. What do you reckon Cork miss?
Oh, Cork were actually, at times, their handling last night let them go, but I'd say I'll go for four.
Okay. 21 versus six.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. So when you're looking at a team, right, you're trying to get them to operate, and every team, we're always looking at game plans, right? And we're trying to operate a game plan at a very, very high level. Of course we are, but we need to build the blocks first, right? We need people to be able to operate in a high level. So if we can't do the basic fundamentals of the game right and play with our heads up and execute the basic fundamentals of a game right, how do we operate a game plan at a very, very high level?
Yeah.
It's very tough. And then what you do is you add in opposition who play a very high game level, have a very, very high level game plan that executes very well. So then your game plan becomes even harder to execute when it's under pressure. You know,
yeah.
If you ask the team now, right, pass the ball five times from inline to inline without dropping it, that's difficult enough. It is difficult enough, isn't it, Murph?
Yeah, yeah.
At 100 miles an hour, whereas you add in an opposition like Cork or a Limerick or a Kinney, now do it without dropping it. Fuck me, it's very, very hard. So that's why the Galway game plan last night, when you look at their shooting chances, we had, I think, 20 shots, 22 shots last night, two drop short. Everything was static. You know, it was kind of unstructured. You know what I mean? Mm. It was under pressure. Cork's shots were athletic. They were movement. They were expansive. You know what I mean? So everything was like the end of a move. All Cork shots felt like an end of a move. Or Galway's felt very, very kind of, you know, forced. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I'm just looking, Cork seemed to have this, it's like a killer instinct now at the minute. We talk about rootlessness in sport. And all the good teams are rootless. Kilkenny back in the thousands, their teams were a rootless bunch, right? And that's a great trait of a team. So if you picture that goal, Brian Hayes gets it, right? What some forwards do is turn, pop it over for a point. A lot of forwards do that now. They would, in fairness. He turns and goes, green flag coming here. Simple as that. Tim O'Mahony, his goal. He gets the ball, and I'd say his 50-yard line, was it? He turns over Connor, passes off to someone. Yeah. He just goes, right? Ends up, green flag. Whereas I was looking at it, there was a passage in the 24th minute. Tom Allen gets the ball. He goes for a point. He gets a point, right? If he slips the ball, just a pass, a 10-yarder into Sheeran and Killian, I think it was, maybe someone else, we've a goal on. We've got a 4-on-3 here. This is an opportunity. That's a rootless streak, but it feels like, let's just get the point. You know what I mean? Which is kind of a safety. And maybe that's a sign of where we're at the minute, that we're just trying to survive, you know what I mean, as opposed to kill. No, I hate to use them words, but you know what I'm trying to use in sport, in the context of sport. So I just think if you look at where teams are at the moment, and that's the big thing, Cork are well down the road now, I mean, and they probably have, again, open to debate here, they've probably moved themselves into the bracket of favourites or semi-favourites, second favourites of Ireland, whereas Galway at the moment are probably 7th or 8th, in fairness, right? And I'm looking at we've conceded an average of 32.6 games against the three Munster teams that beat us. You know, that's a very high concession rate, lads. We've been beaten by an average of 12 points. We've been beaten by 12 points of each of the three teams, Tip, Cork and Limerick. You know, so, but this is, because I'm not badgering the Galway players. I'm just saying we have a bit of work to do. That's all. We have to integrate some new players, some more players, etc. We have to allow Micheál and his management team time to get this going. And then I will genuinely, even though I have friends of the team and friends of the management team, I will genuinely judge them in probably 18 months' time. But I'm not going to throw in shade now at lads because they didn't play unreal in a league game against a team who are hardened and together and moving like a bloody train at the moment. So I have an awful lot of stats that I can throw out to you, but it all points to the same picture I've just spoken about there. We need to start at a very, very baseline level here, get our basics perfect, then start building into game plans, puck execution, etc., and then start criticising players. Not criticising, but start demanding players execute at high level if they're going to stay on the team. But there's problems all around, but just it's going to take a long time to fix, I believe.
Okay. Murph, look at scale, bring up Declan's second point before even a chance to read it. So Cork potentially now favourites to win the All-Ireland. They didn't hide after the game. Patrick Horgan was asked about it, particularly on the panel. Do you want to win the league? And he was like, of course you do. You get to a final, you want to win it. Doesn't matter about, you know, people thinking we're peaking too early in the year or whatever. He was like, there's 30-odd lads out there. He said it during the week in another series of interviews about the Féile. He reckons it's the best panel in the 18 years that he's been a senior hurler that Cork have had.
It's fair.
He reckons there's depth. And he reckons there's no reason why they can't go right at it. And he was reeling off players that were on the panel last year and were used and are kind of on the fringes at the moment, lads who were injured. And you just realise, actually, look, their forward line is flying, but there is loads of depth there. In your opinion, from what we've seen so far, with all the caveats about league is league and championship is championship, are Cork now installed as the favourites to win the All-Ireland?
At this moment in time... Yeah. If you'd have to say yes, like I actually thought it last night before the question even came to us for the pod tonight. I got the impression watching them last night. I remember thinking back to say, well, after losing the All-Ireland last year, one of the first questions nearly everybody would have is, well, how are they going to react next year? Are they going to just fall away, lack of confidence? And geez, we got so close. We did the big job of beating Limerick, but then didn't get over the line in the final. Was all that kind of emotional hangover going to hit them this year? And it hasn't. Like, okay, Tipperary have ended up on better points at the end of the league. But in terms of how Cork have went about their business, like last night, they just looked like a different level and looked like that they were really, really confident. Even Patrick Horgan, like he had an excellent game last night. Alan Connolly came off the bench and was, you know, really good. Anybody they introduced was really good. And it was, again, as Gael said, it was that depth of panel. I was looking at them every time they brought someone in. I was going, Jesus, actually, you know, they really do have a tried and trusted depth in the panel now, which, like, you could say.
Coleman's first minutes of the season, as you mentioned, Alan Connolly generally was off Fitzgibbon first and then kind of eased back into the team. They've kind of brought Dermot Healy as an impact player in and out of the team.
Yeah.
Horgan, they've obviously managed his minutes with his age and everything as well. It's not like as if they've gone balls to the wall all league with just a starting 15. They've looked at a lot of players here.
They have. And the big thing for me that I can see throughout is that they're all singing off the same hymn sheet in terms of the style of play that they're playing. Like Skell was pointing out there, like they can't really, like that Galway are struggling at the moment. And you know, every other team probably at the moment, bar Tipperary, are struggling in terms of just trying to get their game plan going, and there's injuries and there's all these different things. But Cork just look like they have a complete understanding. And for me, that's kind of forged over the last few years. You know, Pat Ryan has been trying to do a style of hurling, a brand of hurling, I suppose, that's effective for all of them. I think the one thing you see about them then as well is that they all seem to be enjoying, and like, you know, the style that they're playing. Not only do they understand it, they know what's expected of them. They know how to execute it. And when you understand all those things, you get into that flow mode that people talk about, where things are just happening for you because, like, you're making them happen. Like Shane Barrett got a great point there in the first half last night. Ball came down, man on the shoulder. It bounced just in front of him. He put the hurl down, it popped up, and he was gone. And he went down the line, popped it over the bar, reset. If you look at, I think Ethan Toomey was running through one stage with the ball. Okay, the ball didn't settle for him. He went to try and catch it. Niall O'Leary was after popping it to him. Ethan Toomey didn't make it settle. When he dropped the ball, Niall O'Leary picked it up. He stayed on the shoulder the whole way and supporting and kept going. Like you go at Tim O'Mahony's goal. There's just this edge about them where they're driving forward. And I think also another reason why we did see that fouling where they're pulling lads down. I have no problem with that, might I say as well. Like, as in, they've looked to see, what am I allowed to do? Well, I'm allowed to do that, and I'll take the rap, I'll take the free, and I'll take the yellow card. That's fine. But I think they know when they're pouring forward in numbers, well, if we get turned over while we're pouring, there's nobody back there. So we kind of either have to decide we have enough lads to get back and cover this off, or, okay, maybe we're going to hand over a point here, but it gives us a chance to reset and go up the other end of the field. Like, the goals even kind of felt like, it felt just as Galway strung together a few scores. It's like they felt intent here that we need to go and get a goal. Brian Hayes' goal, bang, gets it, go again. Galway actually respond quite well. But next thing you then, you almost feel like Cork are going, no, we have to put these lads to the sword. And they go at him again and hit him for another goal. Part of that was that Galway, the conditions were right where Galway were allowing them to do that. Another team mightn't allow them to do that. They won't get as much, leeway to do that in the championship. But nevertheless, I just got this impression of Cork that anytime they felt Galway coming back at them, there was this kind of little bit of a killer instinct where, we're going to put the foot in the throat of these lads and kick on. And they did. And so to go back to what you're saying, like, at this moment in time, Will, I do feel like they are now the favourites. Like, we're not doing power rankings around those things, and I'm not getting scale going on doing that. But, you know, at this very moment in time, and in 6 weeks' time, we could be turning around going, oh, look, Limerick are after coming out of the pack, or, you know, Tipperary have really, let's say Tipperary go and win the league final, and suddenly they go out in their first round of Munster and they're looking really well. We could be talking Tipperary at that time. But for this moment in time, for the depth of panel and all those things we pointed to, I think it's very fair to say that there's a feeling that Cork at this moment are favourites for the All-Ireland.
Dare I suggest as well, Murph, that 2 years ago you talked about maybe a lack of edge about Cork. And I know Tommy Welch has talked about this a few times as well, that he felt there was maybe a soft underbelly about Cork from time to time. And even particularly this group over the last 7 or 8 years, some of them who are still involved now, that maybe they weren't willing to go to maybe the cynical places other teams would go at. And maybe they didn't quite have that bit of edge that's required. Right now, we're praising their physicality, their running power, the fact that they'll give away frees in sensible positions. Have Galway now got the, or not Galway even, have Cork now got that bit of steel that maybe you felt was missing 2 years ago?
They do, yeah. And I think, to be honest, if you asked me that question, like, it confirmed it for me when I saw the semi-final last year after they beat Limerick. I don't think you can beat Limerick without that steel. But where I see Cork having stepped it up again is they're doing it to teams who, like, every team is focused on Limerick and beating Limerick, and Limerick is the litmus test. But when you get to the stage where you're being ruthless with any team that stands in front of you, that for me is where you go, yeah, these Cork lads are really mean business. And that was the case. Like, I go back, I've been to a few of the games where Cork have been playing and seen them in person. And there was that kind of standoffish type feeling to them, that they wanted to play around you but not play through you. Now they want to go out over top of you. Like, they literally want to run through you. Mm-hmm. If you come at us, we're going to hit you. And, like, the likes of the two Downies, like, they just epitomize that. Like, the two of them boys are up in lads' faces pushing that. Like, I love seeing that, because that's where you're going, oh, there's serious intent here in these lads. And, you know, there's plenty more lads around them, like Niall O'Leary, Donoghue cornerback. Like, those lads are aggressive players. They're getting stuck into lads. And then, like, they have it mixed in with the likes of Patrick Horgan flowing really well. Fitzgibbon is just, like, he's, if there's a transfer market in the game at the moment, like, he's in one of the five players you're going by, and he's in probably one of the three players you're going by. And there's so many of those then, like, creative players, Declan Dalton and all these lads. So they just have this lovely mix at the moment, but it's kind of underpinned by this steeliness that we haven't really seen since it started to see it in about 2023 onwards, really. That's when I first saw it. But now it seems to be a common thread in all their games.
For the benefit of audio listeners, James Scale, the minute that we made that suggestion about them being the top team in the country, kind of sat back and put his two elbows behind his head and went, that's a big comment now. Where are we going with this? So take up that point, Scale. Favourites to win the All-Ireland as things stand.
I'm not turn it off in any way, shape or form, but I was just saying, like, if you're classifying them as the out and out favorites right now, I'd put them in certainly the top two, but I just have the little thing in the back of my head just always pointing towards Limerick, who habitually are not going the best at the moment, haven't had the best run of results, don't seem to be the machine doesn't seem to be clicking the same way Cork has, but I just doubt them before, just doubt them at your peril, you know what I mean? So I put them aside for the moment. I'm putting Cork definitely in the top two, but in their current standing and the outlook and the ceiling, where is their ceiling? Like, it's huge. It's very, very high, lads. You know, especially with the plethora of players they have. Like, more few mentioned players that come in there, or that potentially come in, that I point towards Jim Rotelli, I point towards Roach. These lads, it's just a continuation of sameness. And does the team, as I always note, does it suffer or go back or regress or play worse when subs start to roll in or when guys get changed? And the answer is no. It's not. So it's just a continuation of same. So you can take out potentially someone like a Horgan guy, right? Who's brilliant, by the way. He scored, what, 1-9 yesterday?
Yeah.
And you could probably say, Jim Rotelli could start in that position and go, right, he finishes at 1-5. Do you know what I mean? That's just reality situation. So when you take out a big player, you know, bar Fitzgibbon for me, take out a big player, you know, I don't think the Cork clock misses a tick at all whatsoever. So out of the favourites, they're certainly up there for sure. I reckon if you check the bookmakers right now, they probably are the favourites, which I will do, actually, while I'm here. Give me 10 seconds.
But like, while you're checking, Scale, you can base this not only off a feeling, but like off merits as well. Like, so if you're picking at the end of last year, they're the number two team finishing the championship. I know other people will say, if you finish All-Ireland as runners-up, you're automatically the number two team in the country. Since then, okay, Clare have had injuries. Shane O'Donnell is missing. They've gotten relegated from Division 1. They dropped down a bit. What have Limerick done? Well, Limerick have had a middle-of-the-road league, best way to put it, which doesn't mind them. But Cork are back in the league final. So not only were they runners-up in the All-Ireland last year, they're the one team that have stayed constant as well. So if you look at, if you want to base it off what way they're going at the moment, or you want to base it off the last 12 months, or let's say last 9 months, on merit, and the record will point towards that, Cork have been the one that sustained their form over the last while. Clare are the very deserving All-Ireland champions, but Cork have sustained it. So it's, you know, they're there on merit, you know?
Like, if you're coming towards the latter stage of the league, and you average over two games, 5-21, that's fair clipping that. Fair clipping. And one of those games against Ireland champions away.
Yeah.
That's fair clipping. So that means you're beginning to hum at the very, very right time. And like, they're heading into a game now against Tipperary, who are by all measures as well, moving very nicely. But just the Cork team just seems like a bit of an animal right now. You know, that they're going to be hard to stop. I won't say juggernaut, because they have to be really, really an animal for that. But they are.
How significant is it as well, Scale, right? Because I don't disagree with you that Limerick are still, I think, the team I expect to win the All-Ireland at the end of this year. But Cork have shown now a couple of times that they can beat Limerick, and they've got a style that gives Limerick problems. If you're going to be the number two, and a very close number two to a number one, does the fact that they've shown they can beat Limerick, is that significant later in the year?
Well, that's buried right now. That's finished. Hmm. So if that was a stigma over any team to say, like Cork with beating Limerick, that's out of the way. If that was classified as a bit of luck, right, or an off day for Limerick last year in the group stage, and then they knocked them out in the knockout stage, you say, fair enough. But they did it twice. So if you're able to back it up, now, just like Clare did to Cork last year, mind me, but if they did it twice, I don't think Cork look at Limerick now as a very, very, you know, superior team. Obviously, their record will show more. Of course they do. But in the current standing right now, this group of players will look at the Limerick team and say, we're equals or you're inferior to us, because we're the ones that beat me on a regular basis, to be fair. And to be honest, I know like Limerick people might come at us about this for the past, what's happened in the Ireland final back in whatever year it was, 21, 22. That's fine. But right now in 2025, Cork have zero fear of Limerick. None whatsoever. Because they've proven they can beat them and beat them on multiple occasions over the course of one season. And come here, you look at these teams, right? And you can't just, Pat Ryan deserves credit, okay? Yeah, but certain players, right, have to play well every day for these teams to tick. And I'm always looking at the likes of, you know, O'Donoghue, you named him there. Downies, brilliant every day. Tim O'Mahony has made the midfield position perfect for him right now. There's a bit of ruthlessness about him. Bit of a streak about him, isn't there? You know, the way he's able to go forward. Dara Fitzgibbon, Rolls Royce. Shane Barrett must be a nightmare to mark on the half hour line because he shows up everywhere, covering every blade of grass. And then if you manage to contain all them lads, you have to deal them with Brian Hayes inside and Patrick Corrigan. You know, so you've got multiple levels or layers, should I say, of tier one players. Now, tier one players, you can't have, there's not 50 tier one players in the country. There's probably 12 or 13, right? And right now, Cork definitely have four, if not five. Do you get me? So a real tier one, top tier players. Like, who's a better forward right now than Brian Hayes? Nobody. In current form, nobody. He's just a machine. So, like,
yeah, in terms of scoring from play, he's
a machine. Yeah. Like, there's no two ways about it. And like, I'm assessing him for what he provides that Cork team. He provides an awful lot of focus for an opposition, to be fair. So like, Galway had to shift their team around yesterday to take care of him. And that didn't happen, in fairness. He still took care of us.
By the way, Skell, why the change at fullback? Is this also a plan further down the road? Because I was quite surprised by this when I heard the late changes and I heard that Fintan Burke wasn't going to start. So what's Michal's thought process here at three?
Oh, Jesus, that's a hard question. What's his thought process at three? I think the fullback position nowadays is not like one of before, whereby you had to have a hulking fullback for high ball rim down top of you. You have to have a really good hurler. And in today's game, you have to have a hurler who's able to take high ball and also able to be pacey. And so that's why you've got like a bit of an enigma in Hugh Lawler, who is 6 foot three or four and can run as fast as, you know, Dara Fitzgibbon nearly. So like that's a Rolls Royce fullback, but put him aside because he is the outlier. That's not a prototypical fullback, but that's what you want to get. That's what you want from the fullback. So I'm thinking with Finchon's position, I don't think you're playing with a halfback line in today's game. Just the pace level is just too high. And like, people have to play to their strengths. And Finch will tell you, he's a super hurler, but pace, the high level pace is not his game. So fullback is where you have to land him. But again, I still think there's probably an element of pace that's going to catch him there. Was why Pádraig Mannion got put back for hurling ability on Brian Hayes.
It's a long time since Pádraig Mannion's played fullback, though, Skell.
It's
inter-county anyway.
Yeah, the last time he played fullback, it didn't go so well. I think, if memory, it was against Seamus Cannon in like a 2016 Ireland final or semi-final. 2016, the tip win Ireland 2016.
They did.
So Seamus got that was a tough day. Yeah, that was a tough day. So, but like again, we've had fullback cover since with Doughty and Gareth McInerney. So the reason Park was in there is because we don't have Doughty was injured in the Clare game. Gareth McInerney is obviously retired, and Finton, I don't know, was he injured or just not selected. I'd say it's just not selected for last night as well as a couple of guys. But I wouldn't classify as a problem area just yet, Les. Like, I'm hoping Doughty comes back and is injury free. If he comes back, he hops into number three again for me.
Okay. Just sticking on Galway for a second.
And yes, Cork are favourite, sorry.
in long way of getting around.
Yes.
For you,
the bookies.
Right. As a total outsider when it comes to this, right? So obviously, Skell has outlined it there. They've beaten the two teams who got relegated as part of their run of the three. And then when they played against the Munster teams, 12-point defeats. And we talked about, you know, how loose they were against Limerick. And I thought they were very well beaten on Lee's side on Saturday as well with the game we've just seen. Where are Galway right now?
They're, I suppose, not a huge amount further on from where they were left off with Henry last year, I'd say. Like, I mean, there was a kind of a little bit of a lack of confidence that you're just like, it's not for fear of hurlers being there. The hurlers are there, but I suppose the question of what we're about.
Are they?
How do you mean?
So, like, you're neutral, okay? You're looking at this from a completely, you've no strings attached to whatsoever to go with. You watch them on complete merit and ability, and you've seen these players, bar the young lads, time and time again, right?
Yeah.
Do we have the players to compete with Cork at the moment? Genuine question.
Not to say, like, okay, Cork, do you have the players to compete with Cork? I don't see why you shouldn't. Like, when you have your best 15 on the field, I don't see why not. Like, 2 years ago, savage performance against Limerick in the All-Ireland semi-final. Limerick kicked on, obviously went on and won it. Has there been drastic change there? Okay, we've seen a few players go to the wayside. Maybe the team has been weakened yet, but are you a million miles from it? No, you're not. Like, we were looking at Galway, poor performance in the first round of the league. Since then, we were singing their praises. Now, great, maybe in hindsight, we were looking going, the big Kilkenny in Nolan Park hasn't happened in a while, but what were Kilkenny at that stage? Were Kilkenny really going well? Were they something, a litmus test you could really test against? Hard to say, I suppose. Hard to say that they were at that stage. They played Clare down below in Galway, beat them. But what we've learned from Clare is, did Clare go well? No, they haven't. You know, so, but during the league, we were looking at Galway going, God, they're really starting to move here. Maybe they're reinvigorated under Donoghue. They played a lot of players. They changed a lot of players from the first game to the second game. There's lots of stuff there where you were going. At one stage, I was like, I'd rather take Galway's lot than Kilkenny's lot at the moment because the way they were going, really? The way they were projected. Well, at one stage, their form was just rising. Regardless of who they had in the pitch, their stock was rising and they were going well. And the funny thing is about it is, like, they finished on the same points as Kilkenny, but Kilkenny finished the championship or finished the league on a better note. Not only the fact that they beat Limerick, where Galway didn't. If you look at how both teams got their 6 points, you know, Kilkenny got to finish on a high note, which is always great. Where Galway go out now on a bit of a lull, which before championship, I think any team would feel uneasy about that, going, Jesus, what happened there? What are we about? But for me with Galway is that, like, you have Conor Whelan's, Carl Mannion's, Pádraig Mannion's. You have Tom Monaghan, who's been great over the last few years. You have Evan Nyland inside, outstanding player as well. Darren Morrissey, cornerback's great cornerback. Like, you have plenty of lads throughout the team there that are really good players. Obviously, Michal's job now is to get the most out of that team and bring it to a new level. I wouldn't say that.
That's the question. That's where my questions come from. When you mention Kilkenny's lot at the moment, I'm looking at Kilkenny 15 in terms of their keeper and their five lines, right? And I'm saying, how many of their five lines are set? Set being they've at least two out of the three positions taken. Now, I know midfielders too, but they've at least two out of the three positions taken care of.
Yeah.
And I would say with the Kilkenny team, they've got five lines where they've at least two-thirds of it sorted.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know. We've no line sorted. We've no line where we've got two lads sorted. Who's nailed on that team? Keeper, I don't know lads. Darren Morrissey, cornerback, yes. After that, I'm like, is Gavin Lee nailed on at six?
Gavin Lee is surely nailed on at six. We talked about how good his form was, yeah?
Yeah.
I think, don't take away from maybe the last couple of games. I thought he was excellent early in the league.
I fully agree with you. I think it was a great find and a great job done by the manager to put him there. Midfield, it looks like we're kind of settled. Then after that, lads, I don't know. Genuinely, I'd say Conor Whelan, Conor Ford, and I'm like, yeah, that's my last turn there. I don't know.
Do you know the one thing I'd say about it is that, Kilkenny... The defeat to Tipperary is now a distant memory because they beat Limerick and they responded well and they now get to sail off into the sunset. And it's amazing what one match does in the difference to get a team going. Like, there was no reason why Galway couldn't have went down last night and performed really well in terms of be gutsy, you know, throw yourself around, get involved, and they just didn't seem to do that. So for me, I find it very hard to judge a team until I see them going full guts at another team. And you just go, actually, they're just not good enough. I still think Cork would have beaten them last night on merits because Cork, like we said, are just humming at the moment. But there's nothing to say that we couldn't have had a performance there at Galway where, and I think they do with the players, to just, you know, be beaten by four or five points by Cork, but come away going, you know what, like, that was a strong performance. Their work rate was good, X, Y, and Z. But the one thing I've seen with Galway over the last few matches is just that the work rate hasn't been good. Like against Limerick, the work rate wasn't good, you know, and the work rate against Cork. So for me, it's just like, if they went last night and had that one match where, you know, those things were there, I'd go, yeah, that's no problem. The concern I'd have for Galway at the moment is not, do they have the players? It's the players that are there. Why aren't they reacting to, like, you know, working really hard? They lost the first match against Tipperary and responded in Nolan Park. Because they were hurting. Maybe some people would say similarly how Kilkenny were hurt against Tipperary and responded against Limerick. Maybe there's some sort of relation there. Mm-hmm. But I think Galway's biggest challenge at the moment is that there's excellent players there, i.e. Conor Whelan's, Cathal Mannion's. There's really good players there, etc. I think the raw material is there for this Galway team to go and do a bit of damage. But I think their biggest problem seems to be confidence and a bit of work rate as well.
Confidence. So for me, Cathal Mannion's our best player, definitely by a mile. Where do you play him? Like, I would put him at 11 and tell him to pull all the strings, right? But you use the word reaction. I agree with you. We just look very reactionary at the moment. There's no pro-action.
Yeah.
You know, we just look to see what's been played in front of us and then try react to that as opposed to just going at it. Whereas Cork at the moment, and I'm using Cork because obviously they were last night's opposition, they just seem to go at it proactively, regardless of who the opposition are. We're going to play in this way, I'm going to attack it. If you beat us, you beat us. If you don't, you don't. Where we're kind of a bit standoffish. And that probably comes with new management, integrating new players. Like this is Pat Ryan's third season, for example, right?
Yeah, this is Neil's first.
Yeah. First with this group. So I fully understand that it's going to take a bit of time. My level of expectancy for Galway this year in terms of our Ireland status, you know, if we get to a semi-final, I'm very happy with that, lads. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
That's major ground. So like, I know it sounds like I'm being harsh on Galway, but I'm just saying this. Like, we have, don't get me wrong, we have brilliant players, but it's going to take a lot of time, I think, to get them sorted in terms of a structure, a system that makes them thrive confidently to take on big teams, step by step by step. That's why when you said Kilkenny, I was thinking, geez, like, I think as a Galway man, Kilkenny are further down the road than us. You know what I mean? And that they're well settled in terms of their six lines, including the goalie. I'm saying I'm not sure who's settled in our team, straight up. So I'd say we have guaranteed five starters that I know of. But where to put them, I don't know.
Well, the other thing as well, Skell, there's no change coming out of this forward line. And I know we talked about this a little bit last week, and you were saying that really it's about the type of ball that's coming into the forwards that's the problem. So last week, 3 points in play against Limerick from the starting forwards. Carl Mannion obviously did a really good job at the weekend, got 5 points. But outside of that, so Conor Whelan scored 1 point from play across Cork and Limerick.
Yeah.
Brian Kincannon didn't score from play. Evan Nyland got 1 point from play. Rory Burke, 2 points. Tyrone Clean, a point. And that's it. Like, that's a very, very low return. Yeah, so and was that 13 points from play across the two games?
I agree with you, sir. I fully agree with you. Like, and the points we're getting are very, very high difficulty. They're high difficulty, you know, shots that we have to score, let's say, from, like, Tiernan Clean's one last night, for example, 50 yards out on the sideline, has to pump it up in the air, whereas Cork just seem to have time and space. Cork are playing with a high level of athleticism. And I guarantee if we put a camera behind each goal and watch the forwards' movement in Cork, it'd be something to behold. And if we did the same thing for Galway, I would say it wouldn't be. So I just think we have an awful lot of work to do on movement-wise. And it's what I always say. You've heard me say this before, lads, about Conor. Conor Whelan always seems to be getting the ball 50-50, under tackling. And I'm wondering, was it the ball or is it his actual running off the ball? And now I'm saying it's probably running off the ball to a degree as well. Our forwards aren't moving, like, left, right, and centre. Like, the movement for Hayes' goal last night, like, there was lads going all sides. Do you know what I mean? And it was just hard running that is unselfish that might result in a positive outcome for the team, even if you don't get near the ball. So you could look at Patrick Hogan and say, how many runs has he made across that 21-yard line laterally? It could be 50 in the game. You just don't know, but he might get the ball twice. Do you know what I mean? And that's just a very, very high-level operating system that the players have bought into. And I just don't see it from Galway at the minute. I'm not being critical of Galway. I'm just saying it's not there. Will it come with the management teams over them? I'll say absolutely, it will. But it's just going to take time. It needs to be integrated because I haven't seen them doing it in the last couple of years. So they're picking up now from scratch against a team last night who are 3 years down the line, operating at a very high level. So again, I'm not here banging the Galway or shit drum. Far from it. I'm saying we have the nucleus and we have good players. When we have a good management team, you're just going to take a little bit of time. So when you talk about scores and play, yes, you can be critical from the productivity and the output, but I'm just saying context, give it a bit of time where we are presently. That's all.
Family podcast. I would love to make the title for this week. I'm not banging the Galway a shit drum.
I love that. Yeah. I got a picture of a drum in my head just with the banner, the Galway shit drum on it.
I want to do it, but I'm going to resist it. Because
well, plenty of people will say they are. Plenty of people will completely reckless. And you know, you know yourself. They react and go, they're Galway useless. But context is everything. It's absolutely everything.
You know? One of the things I would say about this, like, and I was just thinking about what you're talking, Scale, is that, like, Pat Ryan, where Cork are at the moment, everybody's delighted. I'm sure in Cork, they're delighted with them, what they're doing. And around the country, we're saying, geez, they're a great team. But go back. I'm trying to think, trying to get my timelines right here. Was it even a year ago at this stage where people were possibly calling for Pat Ryan's head? Like, you know, people saying that maybe he's the right man for the job. Certainly 2 years ago. Like,
Was the Clare game Murph at home?
It was one of those. I have one particular game because I remember then quite quick after that, they started to get the wheels in motion. But like at that time, again, we talk about snapshots in time. At that time, there was people going, no, the players aren't there. You know, the management isn't right. They should have done this. They should have done that. And like there's a bedding in phase for every management. There's a kind of a bit like if it eventually goes right, it doesn't just go slowly and straight to right. It goes up and down and up and down, and well, eventually you get it right.
You made a great point there, right? So Pat Ryan took over in the season 23, isn't that right, Will? This is third year, isn't it?
Is it 22 or 23?
So in 2023, Cork won one game and drew one. They bet Watford and drew a chip in 23. Last year, they won two games.
Yeah.
Right? So in the 2 years in Munster, they've won three and drew one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Out of eight games. So you'd say they've lost four, obviously. That's not a great record, you'd say. So you're proving my point as well. Context is everything. Right now, where we are, if you're looking at their championship record, you'd say, not hectic. They've 3-1-4 inside Munster. But now that the favourites are Ireland, because he has them where he wants them, they're moving in the right direction. Mm. Whereas you're right, Murphy, he could have been gone after the Munster championship last year. So that's why, in Galway's terms, I reiterate, everyone calm down. Everyone calm down. Oh, we know there's issues, we know there's problems, but just give them time to fix it. And if they can't fix it over the course of 2 years, fine, let's reassess.
Okay. I think we can probably move off that game because we should chat.
I think we can, yeah.
So, you're sure now, Will? There's no afterburners.
No, we've given the post sporting to Galway particularly, yeah. Well, you know, if you're a Corker Galway fan, you got plenty of value from the pod this week.
Well, to be fair, out the weekend.
It was the game with stakes.
Yeah.
So obviously, Tip and Clare, Tipperary continued that momentum into the final, 22 points to 118 in the end. Tipperary weren't ahead in the game until minute 74. Dara Saclum then pops over a point, so they beat Clare by a single point. Jason Ford with 9 points, 7 frees, 165. You might wonder, where's Darren McCarthy? He's been hitting all the frees. He was rested for the under-20s. And I was watching an interview with Brendan Cummins, who's the under-20 manager for Tip, and he was saying that there was an understanding now that they had qualified that Tipperary were going to have the best chance to get a good run into the start of the 20s.
I love that word. Yeah. Do you know what that translates to, Will?
Go on.
That he hasn't seen sight nor sound of Darren McCarthy for the last 4 months, and now he hopes he has him for Tuesday evening. That's what it means.
Could do. Maybe he's just had him for the past week, and maybe that's going to be enough when the lad's been flying.
Believe me.
But that's, I think it's politically correct GA speak. I think that's what you can class that as.
Yeah.
Clare started that game really well, 8 points up, turned a bit with the wind then, 13 points to 4 was the flip over when the wind switched around the other stage. So I don't know, is this a good sign, Murph, in a general sense, that Tipperary were willing to go at this, treat this game, you know, with wanting to win it and now get to a league final, because we've talked about Tip's desire to try and get silverware and all that type of stuff, but they could have put out a complete scratch team here and just lost to Clare, but they didn't.
Yeah, they could have, but I don't think it would have served them very well. Like we spoke about it last week as to where teams are at, particularly for this weekend's, the weekend gone, those round of games. What do each team do? Considering Barr, Galway and Cork, the permutations were already there in place for the rest of the teams. But for me, like with Tip, it's a case of maintaining momentum at the moment. And it's... look, I'm not going to say it's a ballsy thing to do or anything because you may pick up injuries and all that, but I think at the moment they just have to play away that, yeah, this is exactly where we want to be. Like they could have a trophy on the table by the end of this league, which would be great for them. And essentially what they're looking to do is not hit any speed bumps that allows them to carry this into Munster and keep going. And also, I suppose, plant the seed of doubt in other teams who thought, okay, well, let's say if you're one of the other teams of Munster, you're looking which games can we target that we're hoping to get points from. Tipperary is now an uncertainty, whereas to be fair on Tipperary, at the start of the league, that wasn't the case based off last year. Like, you know, a lot of people were looking going, okay, well, Watford and Tipperary, based off the league so far, Tipperary stock has hugely risen and they're looking to maintain that. So, look, going down, they could only hold up their end of the bargain, going playing Clare. They did. They grounded out as well, which is another sign as well. Like you said, they were behind the whole way, winning it at the end into a league final. Like, I'd say it's a good place in that dressing room at the moment. I'd say there's, you know, they've had a really good league. They'll be really happy with that. And sure, look, like we said, at this stage, teams are going to be organising pre-season friendlies. We call it pre-season, pre-championship friendlies and challenge matches anyway. There's no better one than going and playing the league final. And Patrick Horgan even touched on it there after the game last night. So, Tip will be really happy. And like you said, yeah, maybe another team would have or could have sent out a scratch team, but probably wouldn't have served Tip too well to do that over the weekend.
No, and look, the changes Tip made, so it was 7 in all. Tynan was suspended. I'm sure we're going to get round to suspensions and suspensions not being overturned and so on. But Noel McGrath, Conor Bowe getting their first starts of the year for Tipperary, which will give them a bit of game time ahead of the league final. Shannon coming in to get some game time for Clare. Dye Lone, Shane Woods getting their first start of the league in their defence as well. So both teams having to make changes because Dave Fitzgerald, Peter Duggan, their red cards weren't overturned either. And this has kind of become a bit of a recurring issue. Again, I went off and asked a couple of referees what they thought about the couple that haven't been overturned in recent times. And I got a line on what they were being told about these. So behaving, and I'm using air quotes here, or quotes around it, not air quotes indeed. Behaving in a manner dangerous to an opponent was the reason that the Tynan one was upheld. And that brings us round, I suppose, to the chat. We'll skip around. We will come back to Limerick in a moment. But, Skell, you and I both watched the last game of Division 1B on the telly on TG Carr, which is Waterford's win against Offaly. And probably the main talking point out of the game is the James Mahon red card. And lots of people have tweeted us all and said, you're going to have to talk with the officials and so on and so forth. There's probably a lot to this. First of all, this is not a red card offence. I had the rule book quoted to me at some point last night. There is no recklessness to that tackle, in my opinion. There's definitely not head contact or attempted contact with the head, and there's no attempt to hit with the hurl. This to me is a tackle that happens a load of times during a game where somebody comes out to, I suppose, leave a bit of a mark, but there's no recklessness as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. And James Mahon catches around the chest. I don't think that's even a yellow card.
Yeah, I agree with you, Will, because when these challenges happen or these incidents in games happen, the one word I always come with is accountability. So who's accountable? So I'm looking at there's a couple of parties here. You've got James Mahon, Dara Fives, you've got Sean Stack in at the linesman, and you've got Johnny Murphy as the referee. So who's most accountable here? And unfortunately, it's Sean Stack, I have to say, because when the replay showed, he is literally from here to my window away from me, which is 3 or 4 yards. Mm. And like, if you can't capture that in real time, then are you fit to be an official? So you'll say, right, okay, let's try give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's try peel it back and say, did he get fooled by the manner of the challenge or even the action of Dara Fives? Dara Fives does go down easy. He does hold his head. That's wrong. And we've been calling that out now over the course of the last number of weeks. I did call King Kinney out a couple of weeks ago. I did say he also the week previous against Cork that he kind of dived, even though when he was the aggressor in that
one. The aggressor, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, you know, did he try to fool the official? Maybe he fooled the official somewhat. But still, I'd be very critical of an umpire if he missed a ball over the post. I'd be very critical of a linesman if he misses a ball in front of him in terms of a clash, right? And which way he's pointing. I'm very critical of the linesman now when he's making decisions of this nature and this severity in the game. I know the game was, you could say it's a dead rubber, but if Waterford were beaten, what happens? They could be out, you know what I mean, et cetera.
Well, it's not a dead rubber for James Mahon if he doesn't get to play in the league final in 2 weeks.
I agree with you now. I am hoping to say that there's just common sense in this issue. And we know common sense is a dangerous phrase to use in GAA because people will throw the rule book at you very, very simply, very fast too. But in this instance, there was no malice. You know what I mean? I thought he mitigated himself fairly well. He kept up straight. He kept elbow down. He was very, very straight. He came in laterally. You know, he didn't come in hard against the opponent's head, and he turned his body into the same direction of his opponent. So, and he grazed his trunk a bit, like his chest. And I just think Fives were down very, very easily. But fair enough, right? If, granted, but Sean Stack looks at it and then calls over Johnny Murphy, tells him head contact, red. I mean, fuck me.
Well, like, you obviously can't blame Johnny Murphy there because he's got information from another inter-county official.
Yeah.
And as far as he's concerned, it seems that it's actually been spotted that maybe it hit under the helmet or there's head contact. And so he's got the right card.
Give this one. So let's fast forward the game a bit, right? Okay, just because the person has the ball doesn't mean... Okay,
Is this a Nolan moment on Charlie Mitchell?
Yes. Yeah. Now, I know about Nolan has the ball. I get it, right? But that doesn't alleviate you from any responsibility or accountability, as I'm saying. He runs right through Charlie Mitchell, okay? In a manner that's far more dangerous than what James Mahon did to Dara Fives. So is that a red card offence? Well, if by the letter of the, not by the letter of the law, but in terms of what you've produced in the game previously, absolutely is. It's a red card. You know what I mean? It's a full charge into an opponent, front on, high shoulder, head, bang, red card. But it wasn't produced, no yellow, nothing. It was actually free out.
Penalty in the end, but I can understand where Charlie Mitchell was coming from. So once he popped his helmet back on after he got attention, he showed the mark in his jaw where he'd been hit.
Yeah.
And he just kind of pointed, I'm pretty sure he actually pointed over towards the other side, almost as if to say, well, you sent off my teammate for that.
Yeah. Well, so if you're going to make a decision of that nature, right, you have to be 100% sure. And the question is, was Sean Stack 100% sure? And if he was, that's a worry, lads. That's a worry. Because if you're 100% sure in that incident of what of the picture that was painted to you right in front of you, 3 or 4 yards away from you, that's a worry for me, isn't it? And like, it's no coincidence he was deficient the week previous. I'm sorry. You know, and like, I'd be critical of referees when I have to be. And I'll also back them up when I have to be. I understand the week previous with the tiny one. I said it fooled me. It did fool me. The tiny one with Keane Kenny, it fooled me. That's where we got into discussion about the potential video assistance. But this one, like when I watched it in real time, didn't fool me. You know, and it shouldn't have fooled him. So I'd say if, in terms of accountability, it's on the lines of an official, Fred.
Yeah. Like to a certain extent here as well, Murph, I'm sure this instruction that's come to the referees to be particularly careful around head contact, and once that's probably ringing in their ears because it's repeatedly being reinforced, has maybe led to some of these red cards that we've seen over the last few weeks. But I kind of worry going down towards the championship. So I want players to be protected, don't get me wrong here, but at the same time, these soft red cards we've seen over the last couple of weeks, these are just straight up bad decisions.
Yeah, look, the one typifies it at the weekend though, on like with Mahan, like that's it's a very poor one. But the point that you raise already, Will, I think is even more of a concern, if that we can't even review them and get rid of them because there's a get out of jail free clause where you get to go a manner befitting of being dangerous to another player. Like, if you don't hit him, you don't hit him. That's it. Like, you haven't hit them. And it would be getting to the stage then where it becomes non-contact because, well, if a player goes in and shoulders a player shoulder to shoulder, it's a judge to be head, but it's shoulder to shoulder, and they get a red card in the moment. That just means the following week, they're not going to get off it because there's a case there where he can go, okay, he didn't hit him in the head, but it could have been dangerous. He could have hit him in the head, which is, that's a cop-out. But this one was, you know, it wasn't in the ballpark at all of being a yellow card. So for it to go to be a red, and I agree with you, I wouldn't blame Johnny Murphy in this one either. Like Sean Stack seemed to be the person who said, listen, I think this is a red card. But the idea that he wouldn't get to play a league final based off the fact that, I suppose, you know, the review committee is going to say, look, we're trying to clamp down on these head tackles. It doesn't look great if we go reversing these decisions. Like, Alan Tynan should have been reversed. Like, that's it. Yeah. Well, what Will said there, that it could have been dangerous. No, Will made a point there that...
So like, this was the reasoning for it being upheld was that they had said he was behaving in a manner dangerous to an opponent. So almost intent was taken into account.
Oh, hold on now. Now you're bringing opinion into it.
Oh, I know,
that's an opinion-based decision. Saying, yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're Alan Tynan and you went to that appeal hearing, you would have shown the video and you would have said, I don't touch him.
This is the problem now. So if officials judge people by the intention versus their action, then they're wrong. So officials, right, you have to judge them by their action. It's action first, intention second. Like, or even intention shouldn't be minor. So if you're now suspending people for, oh, geez, you intended to get him. Well, we think you did. We think you intended to get him. That's BS. So the same reason could be applied to James Mahan now. Well, we think you intended to get him, whereas there's no evidence to hold to that. If you ask me, that's dangerous now. That's a different kind of position.
Well, I think if it's upheld, say if he doesn't get that red card overturned, that'll be the reasoning for it not being overturned.
Yeah. It has to be overturned. This one, I think it does, because there's no part of it in which you get to go like where you can actually say that. Oh, if, but, or whatever, that this would have injured a player. Like, he's not going at full tilt even. Like, he just arrives in, hits a shoulder, and where the red comes from is a mystery. But I would find it very hard. If you sat down across from the review committee and they made their argument, I would find it very hard for them to be successful in maintaining an argument there that would say, oh, this was dangerous. Like, I'll give you another scenario, for example, where a player doesn't touch another player, but their intent was dangerous. Let's say Mseth and Skehill are... I go into the goal near Skehill, and as I'm walking away, I swing the hurl at Skehill. Doesn't hit him, but I've done wild swing with the hurl. That's fine where you can say, that was wild. You didn't hit him, but your intent was vicious there. A lad going in for a shoulder and mistiming it. That's a lad going in for a shoulder and mistiming it. It's nothing else. So to bring it to another stage where, like Skehill says, it's an opinion, and you say, well, I think you intended to. You're gone into opinion there. Did he or didn't he? He didn't hit him. So off you go. And you know, like I said, there are only very few small arguments where you could actually say, well, I know he didn't hit him. I know there was no damage done, but his intent was bad. And that's i.e. he swings a hurl absolutely crazily at a lad's head, but doesn't happen to hit him. Those are the only scenarios here. If you want players to keep hitting shoulders, which we all do, and have body-on-body contact, you can't have them going around petrified. And I think it was one of the Wexford hurlers said a few years ago, going around with a spirit level, trying to hit lads' shoulders, like, because it just it doesn't work, like, you know.
Yeah, no, 100%. Look, it's one of those, obviously lots of people have seen it, even if they weren't watching the game, the clip has gone wild, really, in the last 24 hours or so. The upshot of it was, Skell, and again, Tadhg De Burgh is now getting minutes into his legs and getting that bit of form ahead of championship coming around as well. He was more than happy to drop as a spare man, and some people have said he hurled all before him for the rest of the game. Like, he just came out multiple times with the ball and is awfully tired. They hit the ball longer and longer, and De Burgh seemed to come out with it every single time. So the plus point, if you're Waterford right now, is that some of these players who weren't available early in the league, De Burgh among them, are now coming back to fitness. They certainly look a stronger team now than when they got overturned by Carlow a couple of months ago.
Oh, fully agreed, yeah. And like the personnel they have available to now, like, is chalk and cheese. I think at the start of the league, when we were talking about the first round, even though we were kind of giving them some benefit of the doubt with regards to Division 1B, that they'd survive regardless. I think, did we count before the first game, they're missing nine starters?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
through injury range, for whatever reasons, there was nine starters, which was bleak, lads. It was bleak. And then you couple that with the Carlow result, which by Waterford standards would have been disappointment. Of course it is. Let's call it what it is. So they pulled up their socks and they picked it up respectively, and now they're in their own respective league final, qualified. So if you ask them what was their target or outcome driven, like, you know, what outcome do they want at the start of the year? Obviously they want to win the league, but get qualified. Done. Now they can really focus on a good preparation match, you could say, against Offaly week after next, and then head into the Munster Championship. So they're motoring well. Now, again, Murphy uses the litmus test as a good phrase here. I just think when you land into Munster facing against teams who have been knocking numbs off each other for the last couple of weeks at a very high level, we'll see where they're at. You know what I mean? So I will hold judgment for Waterford on that positive level to see where they go, because Jesus, Munster is death at the moment. So
yeah, it's
they're doing what they can and they're doing what they have to do. It's that simple.
That's it. And I think they recovered after putting themselves into a sticky enough situation as well. The other thing about that game you wanted to mention before we started, Skell, you brought up, you thought Mark Troy had quite a good game for Offaly.
Why did goals, you? Yeah, sorry, I mentioned that to you. I was again, like, when a team is under pressure, like, and your goalkeeper's kind of, you know, he's been heroic keeping you in it. That game could have been an awful lot worse. It could have been. Like, that the margin of loss could have been literally 12 points more because of, like, Due to Mark Troy, I thought he was excellent. I said he got the goalkeeping performance the weekend. I said that now without having seen Limerick versus Clare or Limerick versus Wexford and Tip versus Clare. I get that. Or the rest of the games. But for what he can do is the last.
The hurling highlights on League Sunday aren't going to be on until at least midnight tonight. Just start at 10:20. So
be well in the car.
I had the three kids all by myself all weekend. So I'm a tired man. So I will not see that.
I don't think the listeners are complaining too much about us sitting out two dead rubbers at the end of the league. But go on, Murph.
I didn't want to break the topic there with another Father Ted quote, but I was laughing at Skettle there when he was saying about, who were you saying, Waterford going back into Munster and, like, the lads have been knocking the shit out of each other. Like, Will, you surely know the one.
They've been kicking the shit out of each other for 100 years or something.
There's a one Skettle in Father Ted. The boys are all getting new parishes. And the bishop comes along and he goes, Ted, there's a little island off Suriname. He goes, and there's a tribe of lads out there. And look, you love this now. They're knocking the shit out of each other since 1904. I got the picture there. I mean, you said, like, Waterford arriving back into the Munster Championship. And you love it. These boys have been knocking the shit out of each other in 1A for the last few weeks.
And I'm pretty sure the way that one ends as well is Bishop Grenham goes, are you familiar with using a bow and arrow? And Ted's like, no. And he goes, don't worry, it'll come to you.
He sends Dougal to the Philippines, and Dougal's like, listen, Jez, Ted, I don't know where the Philippines are. Like, I can't even spell the Philippines. I know it begins with an F, like, but...
Oh, God. I'm pretty sure going to Suriname as well. I'm trying to remember exactly how this episode goes. He's like, how do you feel about going to America? And Ted's like, oh, America, South America. And it's off the coast of Suriname.
Lord. Something like, where would you like to go in America? Las Vegas. Oh, no, sorry, I mean South America or Central America or something. Oh, God.
The other games in 1B, so a morale boosting win for Westmeath against Carlow. Now, bearing in mind, when these games got underway, Carlow and Dublin were still in contention if Waterford were going to lose, but I think both teams knew by half time that Waterford already qualified for the finals. I think it's a major caveat, but Westmeath beat Carlow 3-18 to 3-15. They meet in a few weeks time in the Joe McDonagh Cup. And also a couple of Carlow people DM me at the weekend to make the point that they are the only team across the top two divisions who haven't been on TV. Everyone else has been featured.
Wow.
It was a bit mad when you say they weren't showing the Leinster Championship last year either.
Jesus. It's fair to feel aggrieved over that now.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's any kind of conspiracy, but I think if I was a Carlo hurling fan, I would feel pretty annoyed that the next time they'd likely be on TV would be if they get to the Joe McDonagh Cup final.
Jesus.
It's a year without Pinchon. Dublin beat Laois as well, 221 to 13 points in the end. So Dublin rounding off their campaign with a win. They look back at the two defeats they had against Waterford and Offaly, where they were in strong positions late in the game, but ended up losing was the difference for them. That brings us around nicely to Limerick to finish out the pod for this week, because I don't know where we're at with Limerick right now, Murph. I know we're putting them in the you know, the top two, and we're saying they're probably still the best team, and even if Cork have been impressive, we still reckon that Limerick are going to get it together. But some of the concerns we had about them are still there. So Declan Hannan now finishes the league with no minutes. They got some minutes from Darragh Donovan, but even John Kiely said afterwards, this was a really poor display. 1-12 against a Wexford team who were already relegated at home. Are there any concerns about Limerick as we get ready for Championship here?
I wouldn't go into the area of saying concerns, but like, believe it or not, of all the things in the league that I would point towards, if you say one thing that you're like, that's very not like Limerick, or that Limerick are not in a good place, is the 1-12. That was the one thing where I went, oh, we just don't associate it. We associate Limerick playing poorly and at least getting 25 points, be that 122 or whatever it's going to be. But no, like I find it very hard to have that concern for Limerick at the moment, just because of the quality of players that have to come back. But there is a few things there, like Mike Casey limping off it then again the other night. Like, if they have a cumulative, a few things of those, like if Declan Hannan doesn't get back, like whatever capacity Declan Hannan comes back in, if he doesn't come back, it automatically weakens it, i.e. that if, so okay, if he's not starting because he has a bit of an injury, but he's available to play and he's maybe can come off the bench, but if he's not there at all, you're going, okay, well, that automatically has to weaken it in terms of who your reserves or who you have to come off the bench there. O'Donovan, you know, okay, he got time into the legs there over the weekend, but there's a few in that area. Look, Hannan and himself, Sean Finn being injured there, coming back, but, you know, it hasn't been ideal. I wouldn't have any concerns for Limerick yet, but it hasn't been the ideal preparation. And like Kiely said there at the weekend, it just, you know, just wasn't good, you know, and that was really it. But I'm sure those players, like, they have, I mentioned Galway earlier in terms of maybe just not having that intrinsic motivation just to go and win matches and, you know, want to be the best you can be. Limerick have that, and I think, you know, in a few weeks time when we see Limerick, they will have upped a few gears. I think they have the capacity to do that in training, to arrive on into a championship and automatically be a few gears better. But they have a huge gauntlet ahead of them in terms of, if Limerick had steamrolled everybody in this league, hypothetically, I think a lot of teams go into Munster going, quaking in their boots, going, Jesus, you know, this Limerick train is not slowing down. Whereas, yes, they've unearthed players. Well, I won't say unearthed. They've brought on more players in terms of Adam English has had his best league or his best campaign so far. Shane O'Brien, prefer calling him the Bull O'Brien, has been, you know, great as well, and has really seemed to be an option in there at full forward. You know, there's plenty of lads to put the hand up, but the thing is, as an overall unit, I think there'll be a few teams who go into Munster going, lads, you know, we can go and beat Limerick here because it's been done, and we can see other teams doing it. And if it's a case that Limerick go into the Munster Championship as well, missing a few of those players, like, all those things point towards, well, there's an opportunity there for teams to go and beat them. So like I said, I wouldn't be concerned for Limerick. I don't think any person who's been watching hurling over the last few years can say they'd be concerned for Limerick, but certainly they're in a weakened place going into the Munster Championship. But I think I speak for everyone to saying I have full faith that their levels will come up, certainly, but to what level will they come up, and will it come up in time that, you know, that they have full confidence, let's say, once they exit the other side of Munster. That's really where I see with them. Whereas you could look at other teams and say, will they get out of Munster? And I know we'll get onto that debate in a few weeks. Will they, won't they? What will be their path? How will they get on? With Limerick, you just see them going, okay, they'll rise, their stock will rise going into Munster. They'll come out the other side of Munster, but unscathed. Will they come out of it unscathed without injuries? That's the big question at the moment. But I think they're going to be okay. I think they'll be all right.
Forgive me, Scal, for being slightly deliberately provocative by using the word concerned, but it's how we get responses out of you guys. I don't think anyone in Limerick would be concerned necessarily. But, you know, here they are now. Defeats against Kilkenny, defeat at the weekend against Wexford. I think they're two games we would have expected them to win going into both of them. We all locked them in, I think, in the prediction league across the board, all three of us. And yet they've lost the last couple of games. I don't know. Where are you on Limerick now?
So if you go back to, let's just go back to the time Kilkenny beat them in 2019, right? And say, what's the highest level of adversity that they've faced since then? And it's always been centered around injury and availability, but only availability and injury around maybe one or two players at a time. Mm. So you can think Keane Lynch missed a bit of time. You can think Declan Hanlon, obviously, when Dullo filled in. You can think of Peter Casey. But they've always kept at least 12 or minimum 13 players of the team. So they've been able to come through that adversity. This just has a different feel about it. That's like that's all it is a feeling. Like, we have very little evidence, of course, but it's just a feeling that just feels a little bit different. And the manner in which they've operated over years previous doesn't feel the same. Just doesn't feel it. Like, Declan Hanlon is a question for me. Why is he named on teams and pulled off on three occasions? That's a question. What's going on there? You know, the team selection is...
By the way, I find that so strange, because I think if Declan Hanlon is carrying an injury, so again, I'm not sure, right? And the focus has been on him a little bit because of the captaincy changing and because of the announcement of all that. So if you're protecting Hanlon or you don't want to play him for whatever reason, you just don't name him in the panel. But that's twice now. The Kilkenny game that didn't go ahead, he was named to start, and then eventually that didn't happen. He didn't play in the game subsequently. And then at the weekend, he was named to start and then didn't end up playing.
Yeah.
It raises all sorts of questions, doesn't it?
They're questions, and I think they're very fair questions, and they're not like, we're not being malicious in any way, we're asking these questions. But in the same token, like, you look at the way Limerick played against Tipperary a couple of weeks back. Tipperary now in the league final, which is a great shot of it. They're extremely impressive, Limerick. So that's what you know they're capable of in times of adversity, right? And but here we are now, and they just finished the league on what we've grown accustomed to, a questionable note. That's all. It's just a questionable note. So, but we've no doubt here, collectively the three of us, that they can pick up the pieces and get rolling again into Munster. Now, if Tipperary come away and win the league, their first round of the championship is April 20th at home versus Limerick. That'll be a home thing of a challenge, let's say. And if you're asking me to call that right now, I'm going to sit on the fence like you sometimes will.
An awful joke.
We'll see.
I appreciate as well. I think someone pointed out in the YouTube comments, and I've just closed the YouTube down in the background there, but someone definitely pointed out last week, I think their pre-season, want to put it that way, their warm weather training camp is this coming week. So Kylie's also been honest throughout when he said, well, we're kind of tapered a little bit differently this year. So because we didn't have the pre-season competitions, we maybe didn't go at it quite as hard. We played a few challenge games. We've eased our way into the league. Maybe Limerick know exactly where they're at. And as a result, they can go, look, sure, here's where we're at. We know we can reach this level. We'll go off and, I hate to use this kind of management thing, but reset over this warm weather and come back, and then they're firing for Munster.
Yeah.
And a couple of weeks' time, they beat Tipperary, and we kind of go, we should have never doubted them in any way.
Like, you're talking about a team that's won, what, 5 at Ireland's, 6 or 7 Munsters?
Mm.
You know what I mean? So, and that management team is there over them still. So let's just say they know what they're doing. Now, if they finish bottom of Munster, I'll take that back. I'll roll that right back.
If they finish bottom of Munster, we're deleting at least 3 podcasts.
I'll roll that right back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You notice the podcasts are down to about 4 minutes long. You're going, what the hell happened there? This is the point we're going, this is the best Limerick panel of the entire time, as it's been removed. If you won't mind us finishing out, Murph, on Patrick Horgan, because he got the record in the end. It stood for nearly 50 years. It was 47 years, I think, since Eddie Kerr had finished up in the league, which is, again, I think, remarkable. And people can argue, and I saw people asking about, well, what's their points per game? Their championship points per game, very similar. I think it's 8.8 for Eddie Kerr and 8.6 for Patrick Horgan, which is not too dissimilar. You can argue that maybe games were a little bit lower scoring. There's all sorts of things. Different eras. Hurling was different back then. Yada, yada, yada. The reality of it is, for Patrick Horgan to have got to a point where it feels like the last 3 years, people have been saying Horgan needs a different role. Maybe Cork need to move on from Horgan. Here he is now, 36, 37 years of age, and he's breaking the records. Now he's the championship top scorer and league top scorer. It's some gone.
It is, yeah. And if you look at the manner in which he did it last night, it wasn't limping over the line. Like, his first score was a free to draw it. His next score was to break it. And after that, got the goal from play, got a good few points from play where he was looking really dangerous. He got 1 point there in the first half. Could have been a goal. He just mishandled it and had to turn back on himself and popped it over, and was disappointed at only getting probably at that stage his fourth or fifth point. It's an incredible achievement. And I think, overall, like, lots of these things balance out in terms of, you could make the argument about, okay, the games a good few years ago were lower scoring, etc. like that. But, like, you know, for Patrick Horgan still doing what he's doing now at this stage of his career, it's, you know, it's no mean feat, you know, to be still performing at that level physically with the game gone to such a physical level, is outstanding. Like, nobody ever doubted his hurling ability, but it's great achievement, you know. And I'm sure there's been tough years there for Patrick Horgan, no doubt. Like, he's there a long time. There's been years there where Cork were nearly making up the numbers at certain times and maybe not competing as much as they are now. So, like, he maintained his standard throughout all that. So look, it's a great achievement. We probably don't make as big a fuss of it as we should. But look, we're going to look at him in a championship now again. I can't remember, did he finish up? He did finish up last year as being the leading championship scorer. He's going to kick on again later this year with the championship as well. So look, it's a fantastic achievement, and he fully deserves it.
All right. Paul, would you scale your take on Patrick Horgan and what he's achieved here?
Sure, Murphy said it all, in fairness. It's brilliant. And he's defying the test of time too in terms of his age, because we know how the game has sped up over the last number of years, and he's been able to, you know, respectfully speed up with it. Like last night, he didn't miss a beat, and he was marking a man that was potentially, I'm going to say, 10 years his junior. You know, so that's no mean feat, That's no mean feat, and it's credit to him and his preparation. So, and like, I love watching him play still, so long may continue.
Yeah, look, again, this, by the way, is not to take away from Eddie Kerr whatsoever. That man is like one of the top legends of a game of all time. And I see people were making the argument last night. It was like, oh, I'd say Horgan would swap all these scores for one of his Celtic crosses. And I 100% reckon he would. But that's not to take away from Eddie Kerr's achievements as part of great Kilkenny teams, or the fact that maybe Horgan has been part of... Like, if Horgan had been involved in some of the Cork teams a decade before, he would have been star forward on that team.
Yeah. Well, can we just comment to the Teach Carr, fair play to them. They showed the highlights of the 2013 Ireland yesterday.
Such a good game.
How close were Cork to win that game?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where you had it grabbed right and your grip loosened and it got taken away from you.
It was so close, not to get into it. It got into the level of game management. Never mind. Yeah. Could they have? It was game management, really. That's the level.
That's sideline at the end.
I know what I would have done there.
I put it in the corner flags where I put it.
Like you're putting the ball on a green in golf, you tap it down to the corner and you run in for a big melee in the corner and stand over.
And then you foul.
And then you foul.
And you stand there and you make them bring it up 10 yards and you stand again.
You pull everyone down. You pull the linesman down. You pull the umpire. You pull everyone down. Yeah.
Put the ball into the crowd. Everything.
Do you know what kind of signified how close that was to happen? Was Nash was talking about in the BGE that he said he looked over at one point. And obviously Jimmy Barry Murphy is in that position, you know, it's like the end of game position. He said all the photographers were basically ready to get the photo of JBM with another All-Ireland. That's the position they were in. And then what felt like a flash later, Donovan's popping the ball over the bar and they're reset to get ready for a reach.
Yeah.
It was that close. It was actually
that close,
tangible to touch it. Like, what a game though.
Yeah,
and then we would have done the replay. But yeah, I love when the show ends. You're like, oh yeah, it's been a while since I've watched this. I remember Podge was saying to us that he actually hadn't watched the first game in ages, but his mother watched it ahead of the final the year just gone by, and he sat down afterwards and went, ah, sure, maybe I should give it a look. And then he realised actually this game was an absolute fucking cracker.
And that's from a man, like, considering Podge hasn't watched it, he watches and listens to everything, every sport and podcast. It's interesting to hear that he didn't actually watch back that game.
Is it different, before we finish up, and this could well end up spilling into the members pod yet, do you watch back your old games, Murph? Or do you find it weird watching yourself?
Will, hold that question. End this podcast. This is going to take some time. Okay.
That sounds like members pod material, to be fair.
What a way to bridge it into the members pod. So the members pod is going to start with Paul Murphy and James Gell talking about how difficult they find it to watch their previous matches. So that's where we'll go with that. If you do want to listen to members pod, by the way, and if you're not a member and you just like a taste for it, I would like to apologise to the members for last week. I accidentally put the wrong day down as the date on it. So it went up on Friday as opposed to Wednesday by mistake. That was mea culpa. That was my mistake. This week, I'm going to put it up tonight, probably, because I'll have time to do it. But yeah, if you want to listen to it for free, 3 free listens if you sign up on the Off the Ball app, you can go from there. If you don't like it, blame us for turning you off it. But maybe it'll be the gateway that'll make you a member. James Gell, I'm looking forward to hearing you on the Members Pod talk about that very, very soon indeed. And Paul Murphy, thanking you as well.
Sound, thanks very much.
Nice. We'll see you all next week.